Hello, everyone. It's Paul D'Souza from Sightline Wealth Management, and today I'm speaking with Nancy Gruny from Objective Financial Partners. As everyone is aware, Sightline has an open architecture wealth management platform where we bring in the best-in-class professionals and collaborate on files, and Objective performs the financial plans for our clients. So very happy to speak with Nancy. Nancy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Paul, for inviting me to be here today. It's certainly a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. So maybe just for those who have not heard of Objective or have the pleasure of dealing with your firm, maybe introduce you and your firm.
Absolutely. Happy to do so. To provide some context, we are fee-only, advice-only, fee-for-service financial planning firm, which means that we don't sell any financial products whatsoever. One of our primary focuses is really building out long-term financial and retirement projections for our clients and their advisors, essentially to help them make sound decisions today for tomorrow. We're not limited by location because probably I'd say about a third of our clients don't even live in Ontario. We work with clients all over the country and all over the world for that matter. We really see ourselves as teachers filling an educational role, presenting complex financial planning concepts in a simple and understandable way for people to grasp is really what one of our goals would be. So I'm a certified financial planner. Certified financial planners are actually governed by the by FP Canada. They are our regulatory body. I've worked for about 25 years as an investment insurance advisor with two large wealth management firms. And while I was able to build and present client financial plans, there was also a large focus on product, be it investment or insurance. And so since, I was always very passionate about the planning, I decided to join Objective Financial Partners back in 2013. And so I tend to work with a lot of business owners and more complex client situations. And I'm happy to liaise with our tax professionals and other professionals as well in order to provide the best and the most comprehensive feedback possible.
Yeah, so in terms of fee-only firms, I think last we were discussing there's only about 150 in Canada. Is that still the number?
Yeah, that's right. There are only 150 fee-only financial planners in Canada. So it's definitely a rare specialty. And what many people don't realize that it's not 150 individuals. Sorry, it's not 150 companies. It's actually 150 individuals. By contrast, there's about 18,000 certified financial planners or CFPs, which as mentioned is really the primary professional designation for financial planners. What many people may not be aware of is that there are actually no restrictions on who can call themselves a financial planner in any province in Canada other than Quebec. So people can identify themselves as financial planners without being CFPs or without any training at all. And it's a little bit of a scary proposition when you think about it.
And that doesn't sound right on any level whatsoever. Nancy, do you have any cautionary experiences with regards to do-it-yourselfers in terms of financial planning?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do find that some become DIY investors more by default than anything else. They just haven't found the right fit or the right advisor. And so this can result in a haphazard DIY portfolio, which can in turn lead to very costly mistakes as investors react emotionally in down markets, as we've seen this year. Just as you wouldn't embark on a DIY renovation project without having a plan, similarly, you wouldn't implement a DIY portfolio without having a plan in place, first of all. So without this roadmap, a portfolio can lack structure and the discipline it takes to implement and carry out a DIY portfolio successfully. There are so many valuable elements that an advisor may bring to the table, and many have found that knowing their own limitations, respecting time and lacking financial knowledge, that actually finding the right manager or advisor who's willing to work holistically, has proven to be a far better approach or strategy for them.
Has the coronavirus raised to the surface any new issues that you haven't dealt with previously? And if so, what are they?
So I would say that, all the same financial planning and investment planning issues are at play here are very relevant, but there is a heightened awareness brought to certain issues. So, for example, I would say that asset allocation is now brought to the fore more than ever. It's pretty easy to be aggressive about your asset allocation when the markets are strong, as they were in 2019, right? We saw great returns, but not so easy when we experience the kind of volatility that we've seen this year. And so we're finding that this is a fantastic time to test asset allocation. What do we mean by that? Like, what does that actually involve, testing your asset allocation? Well, testing your risk tolerance is key, absolutely. And many investment advisors are, have various programs and software to assess risk tolerance. But I would say also testing based on your overall financial planning goals and objectives is very paramount. For example, what kind of rate of return, asking yourself questions like, what kind of rate of return do I even need to achieve on my assets to meet my retirement goals, would be a great question to have answered. And it's really an example of the kind of question that a holistic financial plan will address. Yeah, so another matter that comes to mind is tax planning. Tax planning is at the top of the list these days, absolutely, with everything going on. And I'm happy to talk more about that. But one thing that a financial plan really assists with is that it helps us to map out or project a client and their spouse, if applicable, their future projected taxable income. And this can be incredibly compelling as it helps us to make informed decisions today.
Yeah, just to maybe drill down on two of those points. So with the rate of return, I know you and I have discussed that the plans that I see that others have had, the rate of return, the assumed rate of return is higher than we're both comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't take into account the large drawdown sometimes that investors take, depending on their asset allocation. And so it could provide an unrealistic number at the end. It could be almost overinflated, definitely.
That's a very great point to make. It's easy for a plan to look great at 6, 7, or 8%, but how realistic is it? And especially when we're mapping and planning, mapping out so many years into the future, sometimes up to 60 years, planning for some sort of contingency is really important. So to make sure that our numbers are realistic and conservative.
And I'd say the other value too that I know the clients are pleased with is the withdrawal stream in terms of assets can be placed in various types of accounts and they're all taxed differently. And so where to draw it from first to have the income stream most tax efficient, I can say that that's something that's very well received.
Absolutely. And it means that then the investment piece, the investment planning piece, is now holistic and echoes or harmonizes with the rest of a client's financial planning life, which is really important. So as you said, drawdown strategy is certainly key here. So it's we're able to map out what is the most tax potentially, what does a tax efficient drawdown strategy look like for this particular client, which would then drill down into, becoming quite granular as far as how much is being taken out of which account type and when, for us to then be able to drive asset allocation decisions by account type.
Right. And in terms of CPP deferral, I think 99% of individuals do not defer. Is that correct?
I guess most people, there seems to be a tendency for most people to take their CPP. Sometimes, I'd say as soon as possible or for sure by age 65. And that's not that that's necessarily a wrong decision. It's just that, as is the case with so many other financial planning recommendations, it really isn't a one-size-fits-all kind of solution. And best, again, examined in the context of a client's overall financial plan. So CPP, what some people may forget is that CPP deferral after age 65 actually results in an 8.4% increase in your pension for each year of deferral. And so that actually means your CPP is 142% higher at age 70. If you live into your 80s, you might be better off deferring. So, and particularly we see that this may be beneficial for those without a defined benefit pension plan, as most people don't have access to one these days. The reason for this is that it allows you to draw down your risky assets early, the ones that you have to manage, generate returns from, and it allows you to push risk back onto the government. We allow them to deal with inflation and longevity risk. Still, we do see the vast majority of Canadians taking CPP before age 65.
Yeah, that's well said. Are there one or two tax traps or mistakes you see most commonly when you're reviewing, someone's overall financial picture?
For sure. One of them you've really alluded to already, Paul, which is that it's not uncommon for people's accounts to all have the same asset allocation across the board. So someone's a balanced investor, great, 50-50 across all accounts, whether it's non-registered, TFSA, RSP, etc. But when we do retirement modeling, we really have the opportunity to identify what withdrawals may be required from which accounts. And so an example that you and I have talked about is the fact that a TFSA for many people may turn out to really be a deposit-only account, no withdrawals required. These are special accounts. The ability to tax shelter investment income is pretty great. So if we're able to identify which assets are held best in which accounts, then this really helps us to drive a tax-efficient asset allocation by account type.
Excellent. Okay, so wrapping up here in terms of a very topical question in terms of has there been any recent significant financial governmental decisions that investors should be aware of as a result of what's happening with the coronavirus?
Yeah, so I mean, that's certainly a loaded question. We could go on for hours about this, but most people, I would say, are aware of a variety of government programs at play that are helping Canadians manage cash flow, whether they are business owners or not. So the CERB benefit, the wage subsidy program, etc., mortgage deferral program. All of these programs have been put in place to assist Canadians during this pandemic. And I would advise clients to work with a competent tax professional in order to understand the nuances at play, especially for corporate owners with regard to the wage subsidy program. I would say that on the tax planning front, that more than ever, it's important to have a big picture overview and assess the impact of COVID-19 on your finances by updating or revisiting your financial plan. And specifically, just to drill down a little bit further, on the tax planning side of things, a number of issues come to mind that may affect investors. Number one would be triggering capital losses. And so this is certainly something that many investors are considering at this time. Especially because the markets are down, as we know. And so this might be a great time to trigger those losses. But there certainly are considerations that need to be taken into mind, not the least of which would be, A, is it appropriate to do so? Well, again, that's where it's helpful to have a holistic plan. We need to have an idea of your projected future tax rates, because if you're projected to be in a higher tax bracket in the future, then it may not make sense to trigger losses now, because effectively what you're doing is deferring capital gains into the future. We also have to be mindful of superficial loss rules. So everyone knows and is well aware that you need to stay out of a position that was just sold for more than 30 days after the date of sale. But many people aren't aware that the rules also say that you can't have purchased in the 30 days prior to the sale either and still hold the securities at the end of the 30-day period post-sale. And so what that actually means is that there's a 61-day period, 30 days prior to the sale, the day of sale, and 30 days after, where you shouldn't purchase the identical security in any other account. There are other rules as well that are at play here, as that affiliated persons are affected by. Also on the tax planning front, we have prescribed rate loans that have come to the forefront. due to the cut in interest rates and the drop back down to the historic 1% prescribed loan rate as of July 1st. All of a sudden, these loans are looking more appealing, obviously, than they were before. And so assessing whether or not implementing some sort of a strategy that uses a prescribed rate loan would be certainly compelling. We also have the area of, or the issue of gifting. Many seniors are looking to gift assets while they're alive. And certainly, you know, this has always been desirable as far as reducing probate. Any assets that are gifted now don't end up as part of your estate. You avoid 1.5% tax, probate tax, or administration tax, estate administration tax on those assets. But something that has many people concerned is that, many seniors concerned, is they don't necessarily want to give up control of the assets. And so if that's an issue, then this may be a good time to consider gifting assets to an inter vivo trust. These are just some of the issues that come to the forefront.
No, that's certainly well thought out. And it's, I can see an audience could probably ascertain that it could be quite complicated and definitely the use of a specialist most recommended. Well, I think that's great for now, Nancy. Appreciate your time. It was great talking to you. Thank you for your sage advice. And for any listeners, please reach out to your Sightline advisor. If you don't have an advisor, reach out to Sightline and I'm happy to have a conversation with you. Nancy, have a terrific day.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Paul, and you as well.
Thank you.